A very good afternoon and welcome to On The Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now today is Thursday, the 21st of August 2025, the day before a Friday. And of course, many of us are gearing up just to get right into the weekend so we can get with the world, deserve a rest, and re-energize and reprioritize our work. Now, whether you're braving the heat in Rundu, checking stock in your Kitman shop as business, or catching this broadcast from a classroom in Ochoarungo, thank you for tuning in and being part of the conversation. Right here on the Radar News Analysis, we don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, who stands to benefit, and how it affects the everyday lives of every Namibian. Now, from education reforms and energy security to public finance management and gender-based violence, we unpack the stories behind the headlines and bring decision makers to account. Now, of course, we will be examining latest developments in social protection programs, recent parliamentary debates on land reform, and the growing concerns about illicit trade activities along Namibia's northern borders. As always, your voice is central to this show, and you can follow the broadcast live via the Eagle FM app, Eagle FM website, and also your thoughts via Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and WhatsApp. So whether you're listening from a road construction site in Otavi or catching us during a lunch break in Walvis Bay, we appreciate you for choosing to spend your Thursday afternoon with us. This is On The Radar News Analysis, Namibia's news unpacked, analyzed, and grounded in the realities of its people. Let's get started with today's discussion. Prime Minister Elian Gerarie stressed the importance of building sustainable, resilient and inclusive food systems in Africa, anchored in agriculture and the blue economy. He was speaking during an official side event organized by Sasakawa Peace Foundation in Japan under the theme Building Sustainable, Resilient and Inclusive Food Systems and Local Economies in Africa, Anchored in Sustainable Blue Economies and Agriculture. The event was graced by the Prime Minister of Japan, His Excellency Shigeru Ishiba, who delivered a special address. Other speakers included Dr. William Ruto, President of the Republic of Kenya, Dr. Jose Eurisaris Coricia Isilver, Prime Minister of the Republic of Cabo Verde, and also Mr. Suarez Sambu, the Minister of Economy, Planning and Regional Integration of the Republic of Guinea. Not to forget Parliamentary Vice Minister for Foreign Affairs of Japan, Matsumoto Hishashi. Now, the high-level session convened political leaders, policymakers, and practitioners and aimed to promote inclusive dialogue and collaborative solutions in shaping the future of Africa's food systems and economies. In his address, Elian Gerarie said Africa lives in a rapidly changing world where technological advancements are reshaping the future and creating what he described as a modernized global African village. He called for strategies that do not only grow economies, but also empower African youth to be wealthy and happy in line with the AU's agenda of 2063 and the Africa we want. The Prime Minister noted that while Africa is richly endowed with arable land, food insecurity persists due to climate shocks such as droughts, floods, and high food prices. He urged for increased investment in agriculture to accelerate production, strengthen food security, and reduce dependency. He further highlighted the need for sustainable farming practices, research and innovation, access to technology, and smart agricultural projects. In this regard, he emphasized the importance of technology transfer and cooperation between Japan and African countries. Now, as a coastal state, Namibia places significant hope in the blue economy. Dr. Gerarie stressed that ocean resources must be sustainably harnessed to create jobs, grow economies, and improve livelihoods while conserving marine ecosystem. He outlined Namibia's blue economy focus areas, which include fisheries and agriculture, transport and logistics, mining, water and sanitation, and tourism. Investment in port infrastructure and transport, he added, is essential to boost cross-border trade. The Prime Minister also called for stronger emphasis on continental value chains through the Tokyo International Conference on African Development, TICAD, particularly in agriculture and mining as key drivers of industrial development. He underlined the central role of small and medium enterprises, many of which are owned by women and youth, and urged for greater support to help them capitalize on opportunities offered by the African Continental Free Trade Area. Now, Prime Minister Dr. Ngarare echoed President Ntumwana Ndaitwah's call for Africa to prioritize value addition to its critical raw materials before export. He emphasized that we are too few to be poor in Africa and insisted that every African village must have economic activity, a community garden, a technological hub, a scientific laboratory, and a library to uplift living standards, particularly for young people. He further concluded by reaffirming Namibia's alignment with the SPF event theme, saying the Perth ahead must be better than yesterday. And I quote, "We are happy to be in Japan and look forward to continued collaboration in the three areas of TICAD. Above all, we are ironclad and aligned with the theme building sustainable, resilient and inclusive food systems and local economies in Africa anchored in sustainable blue economies and agriculture." Let's now take a listen to the words of the Prime Minister himself.
The President of the Republic of Namibia, you have been delighted to be here today and therefore extend their apologies. She sends warm greetings to the Prime Minister of Japan and to you, Your Excellency. I'm humbled to represent here. My name is Leon Grave, the Prime Minister. Your Excellencies, let us envision an Africa where guns are silent, children and their mothers go to bed without fear of waking up dead or abducted, and hunger is a distant memory. An Africa where the Green Revolution replaces youth unemployment and where food surpluses and agribusiness become the norm and the daily song. An industrialized Africa where Toyota, Nissan, and Honda are not just automotive reference points, but an Africa where Japanese and African intellectual property collaborate to shape Africa's destiny, spearheaded by the youthful population through joint Japanese and African technology. Your Excellencies, this Africa is possible. Yesterday, Prime Minister Shigeru spoke about Japan's first contact with Africa in the 1600s in Mozambique. He shared a humble philosophy. Japanese aspire to learn from Africa's wisdom. As Africans,
speaking on the same matter, I reached out to Dr. Omu Kakuya-Matundu, who is an economist, to speak about how Namibia and Japan can leverage their opportunities to benefit both countries. Good afternoon, Dr. Omu Kakuya-Matundu, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Thank you, Yuyu. Thank you for having me.
Now, the Prime Minister of Namibia, that is Eliane Ngarare, has made some important or stressed on the importance of building sustainable, resilient and inclusive food systems in Africa, anchored in agriculture and the blue economy. Now, he was speaking at the organized event of Sasakawa Peace Foundation in Japan, where, of course, they are coming, leaders and political leaders are coming together, and this year it's under the theme of building sustainable, resilient and inclusive food systems and local economies in Africa. Now, Dr. Omu, just this overall of leaders coming together to discuss, what does this signify, especially at this particular point in time when Africa is talking about food security and Namibia is talking about food security?
I hope this is not one of those talk shops that are always there. It'll emanate in serious, tangible. One of the things, let's come back home to Namibia, for instance. We had all those green schemes, and the green schemes need a couple of things. Not only financial, but also in terms of expertise. Japan is a very small country, and they are, if I may say, food self-sufficient. So Namibia, with all our resources, land and everything, we could also do so and have a surplus to export. Now, what one could say is that the one thing that we could tap into is to try and see how we can get through bilateral agreements, cooperate with the Japanese government, for the Japanese government to send their experts over here as part of a grant or exchange of expertise. They come here, we revitalize our Kalibezas, our Uvuguvunku, our Satikongoros, and the one in the south where we are trying to start at this Neketal Dam, etc. So it is a very important meeting, but it will only be meaningful if the Prime Minister in his plane on a lighter note come accompanied by Japanese expertise and also expertise from other nations that has been successful in agriculture. As for the blue economy, definitely what we have seen is that we can cultivate a lot of sea products, your lobsters, your salmon, etc., for local consumption as well as exports. One of the things that we have seen is that, for instance, here we are malnourished, but we have a lot of fish that we don't even taste because of higher prices, etc. So as the president's heart is so deep in agriculture, as it's not only Her Excellency but the whole nation to see that we have got assistance from our developed partners. But I think one of the major things that we can tap from that meeting is to try and see how we can get expertise in agriculture over here for free.
I hear you. Now, the Prime Minister urged for increased investment in agriculture in order to accelerate production, strengthen food security, and reduce dependency. But how can Namibia attract more foreign investment, Dr. Omo, without compromising its sovereignty or local industries?
Yes, we can. In most of those green schemes, what the seventh administration was doing was trying to partner the private sector with government to basically invest in our green schemes. So could be Indian firms, could be Japanese firms, come in and in a kind of a triple P style private partner public-private partnership projects, or they could even come and invest in projects where they are going to either export to their own countries or export up into Africa or so. So yes, government is open to that, and the adverts that I have seen was when the agriculture ministry was inviting bids or tenders, let me call them bids, or for investors to come into our green scheme.
Now, Dr. Omo, Japan, one of Japan's strengths is that Japan is one of the world's top leaders in sustainable fisheries, marine research, and seafood processing. Perhaps Namibia could learn from Japan's sustainable fishing practices to better manage Namibia's marine resources. How do you think perhaps we could go about in this aspect? I mean, we've been talking about value addition, and perhaps we could also do that with our own fishing industry.
Definitely, definitely. What we have seen is that Japan is one of those countries where we are setting our fish or fish products without adding any value. So, yes, I think as Namibia has committed itself to value addition, we should push for that. We should push for that. And bringing in the Japanese to assist us in adding value to that. It could also be helpful. But mind you, if I'm selling something to you, you would always love you to sell it cheaper to me. So the Namibians should take a stand and try by hook and crook to add value to our goods without always inviting people like in mining and all those sectors where we think we'll add value, but they want to buy our products, be it minerals, be it agricultural or marine, at next to nothing. So it should not only be political will, but it should be for Namibians to put our getting our act together and add value to our products before we export them.
Indeed. Now, of course, what about car manufacturers? I mean, Japan is leading in car manufacturers such as Toyota, Nissan, and Honda. How Namibia can perhaps also tap into this? And you spoke about skill transfer earlier on. And now, of course, what's on the card or what's on the table? People are talking about electric vehicles. How can Namibia perhaps also tap into this in order for us to move into hybrid technology?
Yes. We have tried with the Peugeot. The French company didn't work well, because what we could do in this instance is to try and see, we have rare earths here, things like lithium and other rare earths, cobalt and them. So if we can talk to the Japanese to set up a factory here, for the export of the EV batteries and that is electric vehicle batteries, rather than exporting those rare earths just as raw as they are. That could be one. Another one could be in the leather industry, for instance, trying to see how we can supply Japanese automakers with some good quality leather that they use in the seats of car seats, etc. So there, although it will be very difficult for us to set up perhaps a Toyota plant here or something, but we could get into that supply chain and supply intermediate goods to the Japanese.
Now, we've seen something similar of when we had Ramatex, the relationship between Namibia and China at the time, and then when this factory closed down, so many Namibians actually suffered, and of course, I take it that our economy also felt it at that point. Now, should something like this actually materialize, that Japan comes and place a factory right here in Namibia, how should we perhaps ourselves, the Namibians, safeguard to ensure that a fallout is not something that we experience in the long run?
Look, the Ramatex company, and it came over here for opportunity seeking. You remember there was what was called the multi-fiber agreement, where textile products coming from this area going into the U.S. and other developed countries could draw very, very low or zero tariff. So that is why they came here. And when the multi-fiber agreement lapsed, so they didn't have any incentive to still stay in Namibia, so that is why they closed and went. But you are very right that in these value chains, the side should be Namibian. It should be not just be you are in the what is going to be called now the exclusive something zone, but real Indian companies entering that supply chain, either supplying the batteries for EVs or the leather for car seats or any other components that we could come up with.
Dr. Amu, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Radar News Analysis. But actually, before I do let you go, overall, what would you want to be the what come out or what results would you want at the end of this conversations or this talks between political leaders and policymakers at the end of the day?
Yes, definitely concrete results. We can go talk, come back, waste our money going abroad, flying, etc. But what I would love to see is some concrete results when the Prime Minister, for instance, come back from Tikrit to come here and say, this is what we have gone to do and this is what we have brought you as the Namibian nations along. And this is what I think or what government things, how many jobs will be created out of this. We have started working on this and that. It should not just be some outings, but it should be some meetings that will come, that will have positive and concrete results.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Dr. Omu, for making time for us.
Thank you, Happy, and bye-bye.
Okay. This is on the Radar News Analysis. Stick with us right here. We're quickly pausing here and taking a trip to the marketplace. And should you be interested in partaking in the news analysis, 083-288-401 is the number that will get you in studio.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. The National Organization of Parents in Education, NAOPE, has taken another step in deepening its collaboration with regional stakeholders as preparations for its official launch gather momentum. Now on Wednesday, NAOPE's founding board chairperson, Ambassador Dr. Samuel Kavetu Mbambo, paid a courtesy visit to the governor of Kabango East Region, that is Hamtenya Mbayuka. Now, during the meeting, they officially introduced the Kabango East Regional Executive Committee. And so sorry, pardon us as we have a scheduled commercial break coming up. Stay tuned.
Stock up for August with real value at WB. Get a 2-liter Pepsi now for a sweet $14.99. 750ml WB cooking oil for only $26.99. 1 kg Sunlight hand wash powder for just $36.99. And 50 Hi Baby active diapers at only $124.99. See all our real value deals at www.vurmanbrock.com. We care.
Okay, and we resume. Now, on Wednesday, NAOPE's founding board chairperson, Ambassador Dr. Samuel Kavetu Mbambo, paid a courtesy visit to the governor of Kabango East Region, Mutenya Mbayuka. Now, during the meeting, Dr. Mbambo officially introduced the Kabango East Regional Executive Committee and briefed the governor on NAOPE's vision, objectives, and mission of advancing parental involvement in education across Namibia. Now, Governor Mbayuka, welcome to the initiative. describing it as an important platform to strengthen parents' active participation in shaping the future of education. He assured Naope of his support and encouraged continued collaboration between government, schools, parents and community. Now Naope is set to be officially launched in the Kabango East region, with the event to be officiated by Dr. Elian Gerayre, the Prime Minister of the Republic of Namibia. Now joining us in studio is Ambassador Dr. Samuel Kaveto Mbambo. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar News Analysis.
Good afternoon, madam.
It's sincerely a pleasure to have you right here with us. Kindly tell us about the launch of Naope and your courtesy visit to Kavango East Region Governor.
Thank you very much. First and foremost, I just want to say that for us as Namibian, for us as a country, education is a key to development. Now, in education, there are stakeholders, and one of the key stakeholders, actually the first stakeholder in the child's life, is a parent. Now, it has been said that there are three legs in education, the child, the teacher, and the parent.
Correct.
Now, we realize that although the parent leg has been mentioned over and over, we still felt that we need to be more active in our role as parents, not only for paying fees or not only for providing uniforms and so on.
Lunchboxes.
We also would like to be involved even in the drafting and the establishing of syllabi and curricula. Parents need to be involved and to be consulted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's difficult for the education department or for the Minister of Education to call individual parents and say, come, let us consult you. It will always be easier for them when they know there's an organization which they can call and consult the organization for parents.
Yeah. Hence, why not?
Yes. Now, that is why we felt that there must be a time to launch this organization. We started it, and before launching it, we wanted to introduce it to the governor, Hambuka Hamnyera, Hamtenya, to know what is going on in his region. Although there is a starting point, it's the region, Kavango is the region, is a starting point, but as the name say, it's a national, it will be a national organization, it's not only a regional organization.
Noted. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Furthermore, you speak about the launch. When is the launch expected to take place? And also about, since it's a national organization, how do other parents also partake then and be part of this organization?
Yes. The launch will be in September, the 12th September. We organize it in such a way that in each and every region, 14 region, there is a coordinator or a representative of the organization of Naope, and we are in close contact with them. That at the day of launching, we would like those coordinators to bring some people with them to be present in the launching of that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So it is all over in the region, and we are in contact in all 14 regions. There are people who are representing us in that those regions.
Dr. Samuel, while you're still there, just your sentiments and words in terms of parents being involved in their children's education, a message to the parents for them right from your answer.
Yes. Being a parent is not only physical, but it must also be psychological, spiritual, educational. So it is important for us as parents to follow the child from their home, from home to school and back to school. What I mean is that we should not only think of physical support or assistance to the child, but we also have to think of many aspects of the child, whether it's education, whether it's health, and whatever aspect of a child, development of a child, we as parents must be involved. I therefore would like to say that the time of thinking, yes, when my child is gone to school, I will leave everything in the hands of the teacher, that is actually a wrong perception.
Yeah.
You at home is and was the first teacher. What you taught the child at home should be reflected in her life at school or in his life at school. So for you to make sure that it is happening, you need to be present in the education of your child. And link up with the education ministry, with the teachers and all those who are involved in education to see whether the morals and the dreams and the aspirations which you would like to see in your child are being reflected in the school, the day-to-day education of your child. So I would like to call upon parents that our day of working for the child cannot be measured with 24 hours. It's beyond 24 hours.
Yeah.
It cannot be limited to one space called home. It is all over, whether the child is in school, whether he or she is in participating in sports. Whatever the child is involved in, a parent must be there, because that link, that umbilical cord of, let us say, the symbolical or spiritual umbilical cord of parent cannot be cut off by any other event that is happening in the life of the child. The parents must be there.
Okay. Dr. Samuel, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reader News Analysis.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And of course, we pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Now remember, you can also partake in the news analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Belvedere University, new short courses available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Law. Programs, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution, Admission Requirements, Grade 12 Senior Certificate or Equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Secondly, certificate in telecommunications policy and regulation, admission requirements, grade 12 senior certificate or equivalent NQF level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English, or grade 11 certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English, plus 2 years relevant industry experience is required. Course cost $5,500. Application period 1st of August 2025 to 30th August 2025. Belvedere University, where everyone is an achiever.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Welcome back. Now we take you to news beyond the borders. But before we get right there, we tell you what's happening in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Now we're comparing the Namibian dollar. We bring you what the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies. Now 1 US dollar today will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 69 cents, while 1 euro will get you 20 Namibian dollars and 62 cents. £1 sterling, on the other hand, will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 81 cents, and one Botswana pula is $1 Namibian and 32 cents. 1 Kenyan shilling is 0.14 Namibian dollars. And now for some trading economics. Canada's CFIB Business Barometer long-term index fell 3.7 points to 47.8 in August, ending a four-month climb toward the neutral 50 mark. Now, confidence weakened in most sectors, with notable decline in personal services, transportation, and financial services, while wholesale, construction, professional services, and agriculture posted gains. Regionally, confidence dropped in most provinces, but rose in New Brunswick, Manitoba, and Newfoundland and Labrador. Only 4 provinces remain above 50, where equal shares of entrepreneurs expect stronger and weaker performance. Hiring plans stayed muted, with weak demand cited by 49% of SMEs as the main obstacle. High insurance, tax, and regulatory costs, along with wages, also weighed on sentiment. Inflation pressures were stable, with prices up at 2.7% and wages up at 2.1%. The UK's total book balance dropped to minus 33 in August 2025, down from minus 30 in July, and missing expectations of minus 28. The CBI Industry Trends Survey showed. Now, manufacturing output fell sharply in the quarter to August after being broadly flat in July, with further declines expected through November. Total and export order books were below normal and long-run averages, while stock of finished goods remained adequate but below historic reforms. Price inflation expectations eased to plus 9% and weakest since October 2024. Now let's pause right here and make room for a scheduled commercial break. When we return, we'll be telling you what's making headlines beyond the borders of Namibia.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small...
Get your monthly essential products for just 599 Namibian dollars at USAID. 10 kilograms each of Sugar King White Sugar, Top Score Super Maize Meal, and Buck Pro Fat Cook Flour. Also 5 kilos Rice King, as well as 500 grams Pasta King Pasta. All 5 products for only 599 Namibian dollars. You save, I save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
About it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You're still tuned into On The Reader Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now let's start off with South Africa as we take you to news beyond the border, starting off regionally. The Gauteng government on a G20 summit awareness program.
The provincial government will hold a stakeholder engagement session, and this happens in Diepkloof in Soweto. And this is part of the G20 Summit Awareness Program. Community leaders will be briefed on the potential impact of township communities, particularly in terms of economic growth, global governance, and sustainable development. This is in the lead up to the summit that happens in November. Now, the provincial government will also engage community leaders in Omonde, Rivoli, and surrounding areas as part of the broader awareness program. Here's SABC News reporter Lopang Alam, who's got the latest for us this hour. So Lopang, great to chat as always. Talk to us about what is likely to unfold there.
Nkolisi, a very good morning. We are indeed in Soweto at the Diepkloof Community Hall, and we're expecting quite a few more community members to make their way here. As it stands, a number of people have started to make their way. The session, the stakeholder engagement session, is yet to start. But for now, I think let's speak to Vuyomaga from the provincial government on the significance of this awareness program, and basically just talk to us as to what you are expected to relay to the community here this morning.
No, thank you very much for having us. Really, in main is to really inform people of Diepkloof or Soweto generally and the surrounding areas, in particular around Nazareth, what progress have we made insofar to make sure that we are ready for the leader summit of the G20 and some of the legacy issues that will leave behind. For example, within these border communities, you'll find that there are CCTV cameras that will obviously be there even post the leader summit, and a lot of work around the street lighting, the making sure that we surface the roads and some of other things. But importantly is to also engage them, some of the inconveniences that they will actually experience, like the closures of the roads and all that. So people don't just wake up and the roads are closed, but we must then engage with them to say this is where we're moving. But importantly is also to get a feedback from them to say maybe some of the blind spots that the government is not looking at, so that when we go back and continuously plan, we are able to infuse that work.
Vuyo, let's talk economically. How is this then going to benefit the community? They're here today, and I think that's what they want to know. Yes, there'll be some inconveniences for them, but what do they stand to benefit?
No, generally, I mean, the whole G20, and I think if you go through the tourism reports, they say there'll always be secondary reports. Throughout the year, we've been bringing people in Soweto, because we remember there've been different meetings of different ministers and all that. So we'll actually use some of the areas to come here, to dine here, to really experience the particular space. I mean, I've taken, for one, some of the journalists, for example, around Vilakazi and all that, to really experience the space. And also, what of the thing that we're doing what we call the tourism package of Gauteng. So when you're in Gauteng, what else do you want to see? So if you actually attend a meeting, it ends at 1 o'clock. Where else can you go? So we are developing those apps so that also our people can be really receptive, to people that are coming here and really paint South Africa in a very good light. Because over a long time, then we're able to understand that these are the most powerful countries of the world that are coming here. And ultimately, there will be investment that basically follows.
Thank you so much. We'll leave it there for now. Vuyomaga from the Gauteng Provincial Government, just giving us some information as to what is expected here this morning. And we did hear him say that this will boost economic structures within these particular communities. We do know that Soweto is quite a community where it's really well known, and quite a number of people, over 2 million of the population. So we'll speak to the community members as soon as we get one to speak to, who will talk to us whether or not they do know about the Group of 20 summit, what happens there, and really their thoughts on the slight inconveniences, from what we understand, that will be faced by this community. Policy, the engagement session is yet to start, and we'll bring you those visuals as soon as that program starts.
President Cyril Ramaphosa is also in Japan on a crucial collaboration. Let's take a listen to
President Cyril Ramaphosa has addressed plenary sessions on the economy during the 9th Tokyo International Conference on African Development Summit held in Yokohama in Japan. So he outlined South Africa's economic strategy aligning with the African Continental Free Trade Area that seeks to deepen intra-Africa trade and become a platform for which Japanese and other global firms can export into Africa.
We gather at a critical time where global economic uncertainty, the reshaping of trade and new industrial revolutions demand bold action and strategic collaboration. Africa must not merely react to these forces, we must react by shaping them. South Africa is making progress in enabling our economy to participate in the rapidly changing global environment. We have stabilized our energy supply and are modernizing our infrastructure. We are opening our ports and rail to private sector investment. We are rolling out a reindustrialization agenda focused on localization, green energy, and regional integration. As part of our industrial policy, we are expanding trade with key countries and improving market access for South African agricultural and industrial products. We are incentivizing electric vehicles and battery production and supporting green hydrogen value chains through infrastructure and skills investment. South Africa is growing its health manufacturing capacity with a focus on vaccines, diagnostics, and therapeutics. Our country is also expanding digital infrastructure to bridge gaps in access and enhance service delivery. The Africa Continental Free Trade Area is central to our economic vision. South Africa seeks to deepen inter-Africa trade while becoming a continental industrial platform from which Japanese and other global firms can expand and export into our continent.
Competition Commission currency manipulation allegations in courtroom.
The Constitutional Court's hearing the Competition Commission's case alleging that major banks colluded to manipulate the rand against the dollar. Yesterday, the court heard legal arguments in the appeal brought by the Competition Commission against the leading banks. The commission claims that 28 banks coordinated through a Bloomberg chat room with traders allegedly fixing rand exchange rates. Now, the court will continue to hear submissions from today until Friday in this decades-long case, which has already seen two banks settle by admitting liability and paying penalties. We now cross live to SABC News reporter Diabo Sito, who is at the Constitutional Court in Braamfontein to bring us the latest on this unraveling story. So Diabo, clearly this has been a case that has been dragging for years now with billions of rands at stake and some banks already admitting liability. Can you explain to our viewers what the key arguments are today?
Maybe perhaps let me just wrap up what happened yesterday. Is that yesterday was a day of the banks themselves who are accused of rand manipulation or rand rigging. Most of them, we heard from JP Morgan, we heard from ANZ, which stands for Australia and New Zealand Banking Group. We heard from Standard Bank, we heard from First Rand, we also heard from Nedbank. Most of them poking holes in the submission of the Competition Commission and identifying things that they say it could not have happened. And there is an example of this would be ANZ, for instance, talks about that the people that are identified to have been participatory in this chat room, one was not even employed by the banks and the other was not even working there during the time. Standard Bank, a little bit closer to home, talked about the impact that the commission's handling of this case back then had on the share price, which just dropped about 3.8% because they were refusing completely to engage with them because they wanted to know. Nedbank also talking about, you know, some of the details that's contained in their things that they say that there was trading that happened, for instance, on the 1st of January, which is a public holiday, could not have had happened. So most of them yesterday, it was their day. We actually finished quite late yesterday because the Constitutional Court panel of judges, they really were pushing and trying to get through as many as they can. What will be happening today is that we're going to be hearing from the commission, who's going to be responding to what the bank said yesterday. They expected to spend about 45 minutes working on that. Of course, the competition commission is led by Advocate Ngai Tobi. And then shortly after that, we're going to hear from the three firms that the Competition Appeals Court said that they do have a case to answer, who are now looking to appeal that. They're each going to spend about 15 minutes making their case, and then we're also going to hear from BNP, we're also going to hear from Credit Suisse. So we do expect that today proceedings will also cover a lot of ground, but it's what will be interesting and the highlight definitely of today is that submission that will be made by the Competition Commission, where Advocate Ngai Tobi is expected to detail the flaws or the judges' flaws, which judges you may ask, the judges that made that agreed for the appeal to make at the Competition Appeals Court. So he's expected to detail where the flaws of that judgment is that has led us to where we are today, where the Competition Commission is asking the Constitutional Court behind me to overturn that decision of the Appeals Court. So we'll be keeping an eye on the proceedings, which are beginning, expected to begin by 10 o'clock this morning.
Meanwhile, experts in Uganda warn against criminalizing mental illness in Uganda.
Twelve clinically diagnosed mental illness patients are stuck in prison, some since 1997, awaiting an order for their release to be executed.
These people are inmates who cannot be tried because they had mental challenges. Currently, we have 12 of them. Because they cannot be tried, the Minister of Justice has to give, I don't know what those orders are, that they paid the Minister of Justice orders. For us, we just keep them. And once there is no order, we still lock you up.
Currently, the Uganda prisons is operating a single psychiatric ward with 247 patients from across the country.
These are the people who are clinically presenting mental challenges. But we have others all over the prisons.
Dr. Johnson Byabashaija, the commissioner of Uganda prisons, stated that this is because Butabika, the National Mental Health Referral Hospital, lacks the infrastructure to handle mental illness patients with a criminal background. However, he revealed that they'll soon provide forensic psychiatrists.
We don't have the infrastructure of handling mental cases of criminal background. So to implement this law, we need to get all of you involved.
We don't have experts that are versed in mental health and the law to handle those who find themselves on odd circumstances with the law, yet they have mental illness.
The poor living conditions have also affected staff in the 269 prisons countrywide, with 81 employees now being mental health outpatients.
This mental illness is not exclusive to the inmates, no. Even the staff, although we have been managing them as outpatients, I think I have about 81 of them.
Meanwhile, Byabashaija has revealed that they'll soon provide more self-contained cell rooms for high-profile inmates.
I've had the rare opportunity and privilege of seeing my bosses become my clients. Right from vice president to ministers, cabinet ministers, to generals. And I've also had the opportunity of seeing my clients become my bosses. Actually, one was released and immediately appointed the Minister of Internal Affairs. So I want us, all of us collectively, make sure that these facilities are humane, are habitable, just in case.
He mentioned that the institution is set to erect more self-contained rooms in Mbarara for high-profile inmates, in addition to the 36 currently available at Kitalia Mini Maximum Prison in Wakiso District.
We constructed a fair facility in Kitalia here, the Kitalia Mini Max Prison. I have got there about 36. Single rooms. Single. Self-contained. We are also planning to build another one in Mbarara. We are already planning for it. It will also have those single rooms and whatnot. When we are doing these things, we are also thinking about ourselves.
A Mental Health Act 2018 was developed and passed in Uganda to address gaps in the previous 1964 law. However, lack of trained staff in mental health at police and judicial settings has stalled the implementation of this law, as explained by experts.
But in the last 3 years, we've been working we've had a special project on women in corrections, and we've assessed a few of those individuals in three target prisons, and that is where we learned that 60% of those individuals suffered from mental illness, and yet they went through the judicial process and found themselves in prison.
Juliet Nalwoga, NTV.
Kenya and China commemorate World War II anniversary with cultural exchange event.
The song, The Great Wall Ballad, composed over 80 years ago, is a familiar melody for all Chinese.
Only by drawing lessons from history can a future be forged, and only by remembering the past can straying onto the wrong path again be avoided. Historical lessons of the World Anti-Fascism War should never be forgotten, and the principles of international fairness and justice must never be abandoned.
The first lesson is the lesson on unity. The second lesson is on peace. Echoes of peace, as indicated there. And then the last principle here is a reflection on development.
Today, as we mark this exchange between Kenya and China, we are reminded that history is not only about what has been written in the books. It lives through the stories we tell, the films we watch, and the songs we sing, and the lessons we pass on to the next generation.
We've learned a lot of things from the conversations, the matters multipolarity of the world, the win-win partnership that China brings. It's a part of the takeaways that we've borrowed from the event.
One of the great lessons we learned is about the unity. You know, the unity that people of China came together by the use of the Great Wall to defend their sovereignty is a great lesson that everyone should draw from it.
leaders unite at G20 Youth Summit to tackle global challenges.
Hundreds of young delegates gathered in Johannesburg for the G20's Youth Forum, determined to stamp their mark on global policy.
It is essential that young people have a place at the table of negotiations to make sure that their voice is represented. And look around how many young voices we were represented here in South Africa. The first time that an African country is hosting such an important event. So it's really a historical moment, the place to be.
I'm hoping for collaboration, especially in terms of youth, you know. I think the youth has power at the moment. It's just we have to initiate and actually put the ball in the courts. That's what we're hoping for, development and growth.
The challenge for the Y20 is huge. As global tensions mount over trade and territory, youth unemployment is soaring to record levels. In South Africa alone, almost half the young population are jobless.
Y20 needs to take a good stand on issues of unemployment, issues of inclusivity of young people, particularly from marginalized communities, and issues of education, issues of skill.
China, Africa's biggest trade partner and the only country to eradicate poverty, argues the answer lies in investing in young people and boosting global collaboration.
Many of the problems we will face in the future, such like energy supply, food safety, and digital inclusive, will not be solved by one country. And we need to invite the young together to sharing their ideas, to co-develop, and that we can not only solve the problems with our own communities, but also put forward the solutions to their global problems.
For Chinese companies in South Africa, like China Harbor and China Communications Construction, they does not only invest, but also provide technology sharings, trainings and scholarships, while our South African partners contribute more on creativity and local expertise. And for young people, this means more opportunity to work, to learn and to innovate together.
Calls are also growing to prepare youth not just for today's jobs, but for a digital future.
We must produce skills and education of young people for the changing world. So that's what we need to tap on. Let's not shy away. Cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, electric cars. But is our young people ready for those sectors?
The Y20 not only gives youth a voice, it challenges governments to listen. A joint communique arising from this gathering will be delivered to the G20 leaders. It's likely to demand bold climate action and inclusive economic reform to chart the course for rising and future generations. Julie Shara, CGTN, South Africa.
Google recruits Jimmy Fallon to sell updated Pixel phones.
Google has a new salesman for its updated Pixel phones. Talk show host Jimmy Fallon joined company vice president Rick Ostolo on stage Wednesday for the launch of the products.
What's next for AI in phones? What we're trying to do is we're trying to make your phone more personal and proactive. And so it doesn't just like wait and listen to your requests. It starts to anticipate them because it knows what you're trying to do. We call this personal intelligence, and you'll hear a lot more about that concept today.
The Made by Google event in New York saw the debut of new Pixel phones and other gadgets, including watches. The upgrades on show were largely modest, but the tech giant was keen to tout progress on incorporating AI. That includes a coach in the camera app to help users take better pictures. There's also a digital assistant that can display relevant information before a user even asks for it, such as a flight confirmation email when they call an airline. Google exec Adrienne Lofton also showed off new magnetic charging cables reminiscent of Apple's.
You said the A word.
I said...
Can we talk about Apple?
I did say the A word.
You did. You said it.
I believe deeply
that
at Pixel we are confident in our product
Ooh.
And in our brand, and we love everybody in the game, so we can say anyone's name we want on this stage.
That's what I'm talking about. All right.
The Pixel 10 and related models go on sale later this month, with a folding version available from October. Prices are unchanged from the previous generation. Google has struggled to win sales for its phones, with data firm IDC estimating it had a global market share of just over 1% in the second quarter. The vast majority of those sales come in just three markets, the US, UK, and Japan.
McDonald's cuts prices as US consumers feel the pinch.
McDonald's is cutting prices in the US as consumers rein in spending. That was according to the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday. The news follows weeks of discussions with restaurant operators concerned about the change. It reportedly sees the company offer financial support to franchisees if they agree to drop prices. The move is meant to win back diners worn down by economic woes. McDonald's will now discount eight popular combo meals by 15%. The journal says it will also offer $5 breakfasts and $8 Big Mac and McNugget meal deals later this year. They will be marketed as extra value meals. The company declined to offer a comment on the report. McDonald's has already benefited from its existing affordable meal bundles. Earlier this month, they helped it beat Wall Street estimates for second quarter sales. Rivals including Domino's Pizza and Taco Bell owner Yum! Brands have also been doubling down on value meals. The fast food industry has been battling to counter a slowdown in demand, mainly among lower income families.
Zelensky says he's prepared to meet with Putin if Ukraine receives security guarantees.
Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky says he could meet Russia's Vladimir Putin, but only after his country receives security guarantees. He suggests Switzerland, Austria or Turkey as possible venues. Mr. Zelensky adds he would like a strong reaction from America if President Putin refuses to sit down for a bilateral meeting with him. Well, the Ukrainian president says the latest Russian overnight bombardment, which killed one person in the city of Lviv and injured several others, is further proof that Moscow's got no intention of ending the war. He said Russia used more than 500 drones and 40 missiles, calling it an anti-record. Well, let's get the latest from our correspondent, Katie Watson, who is in Kyiv for us. So, first of all, Katie, what have we heard from President Zelensky?
Well, just to give you an update of what happened overnight, it affected all of the country. There was an air raid siren that sounded late last night, and the alert was in place until early this morning. As you said, there were more than 570 drones, there were 40 missiles, 11 different locations were hit in Ukraine. As far as Lviv, the city of Lviv, which is in the far west of Ukraine, a city that doesn't usually get hit, very close to the Polish border, there at least one person died, several people were injured, and even the Polish Air Force was scrambled to protect its airspace. There was also an attack in other parts of the west. An American electronics manufacturer came under attack, 15 people injured there. So it's been, as you said, a very difficult night here in Ukraine, and President Zelensky has said that Russia is behaving as if nothing's happened, as if no peace talks were ongoing to end the war.
And just tell us more then on what we've heard from President Zelensky in that regard. Again, there's a lot of back and forth, isn't there, Katie, about whether this meeting would take place in the first place. But both President Zelensky and President Putin setting their own terms in the sense of security guarantees and also locations and some basic logistics.
Yeah, I mean, setting their own terms, but I'm not sure we're any closer to knowing when or if there's going to be a bilateral or trilateral meeting. We heard from Russia's Sergei Lavrov saying that unless Moscow is involved in these issues of discussions of security guarantees, then it's a road to nowhere. Now, President Zelensky has been talking to reporters. He has said that a neutral Europe is a preferred location for the talks. We're talking Switzerland, Austria, Turkey. He's also said that he wants to have an understanding of the security guarantees architecture within 7 to 10 days. But when asked about issues of land and whether Ukraine would have to give up certain parts of Donbass so that there would be a halt to fighting elsewhere in the country, he said, to discuss what Ukraine is willing to do, let's first discuss what Russia is willing to do. And, of course, we're not clear on if or when there will be a meeting between the two presidents.
Katie Watson in Kyiv, thank you.
why Bitcoin is on the rise in Kenyan slums.
Now, while many people struggle without access to traditional banking, a surprising financial experiment is underway halfway around the world. In one of Africa's largest urban slums, Kibera, some roadside vegetable stands are accepting an unconventional form of payment, Bitcoin. Residents in Kibera, located in Kenya's capital, are using Bitcoin as part of a project aimed at bringing financial services to one of the nation's most impoverished and underbanked communities. From Nairobi, here's Michael Koloki.
Early morning in Nairobi's Kibera informal settlement. A team of young men and women who are part of a waste collection group go door to door collecting garbage from the area residents. The group charges a waste collection fee for their services. Some of the residents pay the fee using the cryptocurrency Bitcoin.
I prefer to pay my garbage collection using Bitcoin because its transaction cost is really low. It's something like 0.0%. I've been using it for a while now and it's really convenient.
Ronnie Mdawida and his team regularly undertake what they refer to as community meetups, where residents in the area are taken through learning sessions to understand more about Bitcoin. For example, how to purchase Bitcoins using Kenya shillings. Among those who take part in these meetups are local traders from the area, a group that Ronnie says was key in encouraging the use of Bitcoin in Kibera.
For merchants to exist, we first of all needed to have people who are earning in Bitcoin, but now also we also needed people who are willing to accept Bitcoin as a means of payment for it to happen.
One of those who attends the community learning sessions is Ruth Kwamboka, a local merchant in the area. Ruth now also accepts Bitcoin as a form of payment from her customers.
I own a general shop where I sell maize flour, wheat flour, bananas, oranges and vegetables in particular. As a merchant, I have accepted this Bitcoin and many people in my area, Kibera, also use this Bitcoin as a mode of payment and they are able to pay for any commodity they need.
Here in the heart of Kibera, a growing number of residents are turning to cryptocurrency as a tool for economic empowerment and as an alternative to traditional financial systems that many here feel are out of reach. However, there are those who feel that caution needs to be exercised when promoting the use of cryptocurrency like Bitcoin in a community.
The challenges around volatility exist because then Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are very exposed to a lot of, you know, external shocks for markets, and therefore there's a lot of volatility for most of these cryptos at the moment, and therefore that is a huge challenge for the people who live in informal settlements. But then again, it offers an opportunity for alternative finance and for people to be able to participate in global markets.
Ronnie Mdawida and his team at Afribit remain optimistic that their initiative will enhance the lives of the people in Kibera slum. But is Bitcoin a viable solution to financial inclusion for the residents of this informal settlement? Perhaps only time will tell. Michael Koloki, BBC News, Nairobi.
Palestinians free Gaza City districts as Israel begins the first stages of assault.
Hundreds of Palestinians are fleeing parts of Gaza City after Israel began the first stages of a planned ground offensive. The UN's calling for an immediate ceasefire to avoid what it says will be inevitable death and destruction. Israel's military says it has a hold on the outskirts of Gaza City as it begins the first stages of its plan to capture and occupy the area. Explosions were seen in northern Gaza overnight as the military bombardment of the area continued. Israel's described Gaza City as a Hamas stronghold, but the United Nations has characterised the plan as systematic destruction of Gaza's largest city. The French President Emmanuel Macron's warned this week that the offensive can only lead to disaster for both people and risks plunging the entire region into a cycle of permanent war. The Israeli military said on Wednesday that around 60,000 reservists are being called up for the beginning of September to free up active duty troops for the ground offensive. Brigadier General Elfi Devrin said the Israel Defense Forces are already making advances under phase two of what he's described as Operations Gideon Chariot.
We will deepen the damage to Hamas in Gaza City, a stronghold of governmental and military terror of the terrorist organization. We will deepen the damage to the terror infrastructure above and below the ground and sever the population's dependence on Hamas.
Let's get the latest on all of that by going live to Jerusalem and joining our Middle East correspondent, Yoland Nell. So, Yoland, we know that this offensive has now begun. First of all, let's talk about Palestinians on the move, because hundreds of thousands of Palestinians potentially in the line of that conflict.
That's right. Ultimately, the Israeli military says it's going to tell the entire population of Gaza City to move to new tent camps in the south. But we're not expecting the offensive to get to that stage for several weeks. What we're seeing at the moment is that Israeli forces have advanced in recent days on the edges of Gaza City, in the east of the city. People are really fleeing towards the west from those eastern neighborhoods, particularly places like Zeytun, which again we're told by locals saw heavy shelling by Israel overnight. And I think what we're seeing from Israel at the moment is that it's signaling that it wants to press ahead with this big military offensive to conquer all of Gaza City, despite the intense international condemnation that there has been of its plans. So we've seen a lot of rhetoric in the past day. The Israeli military saying after it ordered that big mobilization of reservists that it had started the first stage of its attacks. You had the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu coming out saying that he'd shortened the timeline for this operation to take Gaza City, but without specifying what that timeline would now be. And this, of course, is all increasing pressure on Hamas as well. Hamas put out its own statement saying, accusing the Israeli leader of waging a brutal war on the civilians in Gaza City, but also criticizing him for blatant disregard of the new ceasefire efforts that mediators have put forward, Qatar and Egypt. After Hamas signed up to this, Israel has yet to give a formal response to this new ceasefire and hostage release deal that is on the table. We have got Israeli media reports saying that the Israeli minister who's in charge of the negotiations file did meet with Qatari officials in Paris and reiterated this position that Israel is no longer ready to accept what it calls a phased deal, with only some of the hostages being returned. It wants all of the hostages to be returned at once. It wants a comprehensive deal and for Hamas to surrender on its terms.
Yolande, does this now mean then, given that this offensive is continuing at pace, that the ceasefire talks are really in doubt now, or any possible ceasefire is unlikely to be imminent?
Well, I mean, Israeli media are saying that it's unlikely at this stage that a new round of indirect talks will take place, that Israel will send a negotiations team. But, you know, this is all part of the pressure as well. And mediators have assessed that because it will take some weeks for this military offensive to begin in full, those reservists are not being told to turn up for active duty until September. They see that there is still a window of opportunity to push here for a deal. And the Qataris have been saying that although it is a 60-day ceasefire that's again being talked about, with the return of only some of the 20 Israeli hostages believed to be held alive in Gaza, that there is a pathway here to a comprehensive deal.
Okay, Yoland Nell, monitoring developments in Gaza from Jerusalem. Thank you very much for that update. Well, let's speak now to Rosalia Bolan, the UNICEF spokesperson for Gaza, who's responsible for coordinating UNICEF's humanitarian efforts in the occupied Palestinian territories, including, of course, Gaza. Welcome to BBC News, Rosalia. First of all, what are your teams on the ground in Gaza City saying to you right now? Because as we heard from Yoland just then, there are thousands and thousands of people who are potentially at risk at the moment now. They are being told to move, but of course the question is, where would they go to as well?
Yeah, and that is really the crux of the question. Where would...
And now that has brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. And I hand over the mic to Bishop Lucas Katende as he brings you the Voters Education Program. To stay tuned for that and other programs coming out right after.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my candidatura menace.
Right.
Anywhere, countrywide, to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye